Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
Look at my butt. Now look at my front butt.
Wada, 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 wada.
Open the circuit to the wave motion gun. Open the circuit.
Blood chamber pressure increases.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Only Magneto's right. There's a war coming. You sure you're on the right side?
And welcome to this spare tire of a Steve's Video Store. With me as usual, well, not usual, but with me again is Carl. I ditched the fucking show on Sunday because I wanted to see John Wick 3, and then I acted like I fucking faked it. Kafer. Say hello, Carl.
Hello, Steven. Hello, everyone. It's a little more complicated
and
than
quietly
that.
Quietly during
basically.
This week, Carl. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Quietly this week, Carl, Avengers Endgame snuck over and crossed Avatar to become the biggest money-making movie in the U.S.'s history.
I'm very happy with that. I got no problem with that whatsoever.
Well, I do, because why is the top money-making films of all time list all bullshit?
Well, you know, you can argue about, you know, how good these films are and so on and so forth, but let's face it, they're popular films and they everyone likes them, so that's why they make money, and that's what the studios want. I mean, they're certainly not art films. God knows Avatar is not an art film.
Well, if you look at Avatar and you look at Wes Anderson's biggest hit, which is the Hotel New Hampshire, what is that? The Hotel
Not the Hotel
what?
New Hampshire, the Budapest.
Yeah.
The Budapest.
Hotel Budapest. How much did he spend making that movie?
Probably around 30 mil. I'd have to check.
Yeah, around. I thought it was like 10 mil or 10 to 20 million.
It was a little more than that, I think. I think it was between 20 and 30.
Yeah, but he made like 90 million on it.
Yeah, a little over 100, I think. I could check that.
Yeah. So if you're checking on percentages, the Hotel Budapest has made more money than Avatar.
Yeah.
And here's the problem that you didn't think about. What don't they do with those lists? They never, ever adjust for inflation.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
I mean, really, the amount of money Star Wars made back in 77 is a hell of a lot. Probably would make it even with, I think, Gone with the Wind is still number one.
Right.
Jaws is number six, and I think Star Wars is four or five. Four or five.
Okay, so here we go. The budget was 25 mil. And the cumulative worldwide gross was 174, almost 175
right.
mil.
Let's see. That's
7 times.
Three times its budget back.
No, 7 times.
Yeah,
at
seven
least in
times
gross.
Its budget back.
Yeah. The U.S.
That don't matter,
because
we want the big flashy hits. And I'm not dissing Avengers Endgame. I'll probably see it once it comes on video.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'll definitely see it, too. There's no question.
And if you really look at the numbers, this was a disappointing fucking weekend. The number one movie was about, I think, $45 million is what John Wick made.
That's fine. They did just fine with that.
Oh, I know. It's going to define it just that we had, last year at this time, we had Deadpool 2, which is also a very hard R-rated film, and it did close to $100 million.
Yeah, but then again, That is part of the Marvel universe. Everybody loves Deadpool and his R-rated swearing and such and the humor and that appealed to a stronger base. When we get into John Wick 3, it's purely action. It's not going to be bringing any females in of any note in the audience, and it's brutal. Brutal film. So.
Yeah. And there's a lot of testicles. And, well, you've seen it, Carl. I'll let you give your review of it in a minute. But from what I've read and what you told me, Carl, they really should change John Wick's title from Parabellum to I Am Testicular Damage, the movie.
Well, there's only the one scene with the eye damage, but there are several scenes of testicles and nether regions being bit off by dogs. No, you don't. It's not graphic, but you see the dog attach. That's enough. You need, trust me.
And even though it would have been funny watching a dog walk around all strutting pals with some guy's pee-pee in his mouth and the balls hanging out of his jaw. But that's just me.
Well, if you want to see that, then check out Teeth, okay? That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the rest of this month is pretty quiet because nothing comes out this Friday, and the last Friday of this month is going to be the Japanese art film coming out.
I don't know if I call it an art film, but, you know, for us Godzilla freaks, abso-friggin-lutely.
And we'll bring up something that me and you notice is, where's the art films this summer?
Good question. That's a very good
question.
Last
year,
about
this time, we had Isle of Dogs. Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Mm-hmm. Sorry to Bother You.
Yeah, Sorry to Bother You. And a couple more. This year, nothing.
Well, the closest you got was the real limited release about Who Killed Don Quixote, the Terry Gilliam film, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. But that's the only one.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, really, it just seems like there's no counter-programming. They've lost that art.
Well, you know, they've lost the art of the small film, I think, in a lot of ways, and how to market it. Because of streaming, because of all this, there are so many avenues that, unless they think they can make big money, they're not going to release it in theaters. They'd rather do streaming or VOD.
Yeah, like my favorite of the year so far, Dragged Across Concrete. Yeah.
Right.
Like my favorite of the year so far, Dragged Across Concrete. It was, I was lucky to be able to get to see the damn thing in the theater.
And you might as well give a shout out to Central Cinema, because if Central Cinema hadn't gotten it, you wouldn't have seen it.
Right. And it is good. It's one of the best 70s style crime films I've seen in a long while. But,
you know, and,
yeah, where's the counter programming? Like, that's one of the things about John Wick. It came out after 3 weeks of a PG-13 action movie.
Mm-hmm. And trust me, it's a hard R.
This motherfucker's
R.
This is a hard R.
But before we get there, I want to go back a little bit and make a comment. So I just moved to New York City. And let's talk about art films. There's tons of art films in New York. You go to Film Forum, you could see all this stuff, okay? You also have to pay $18 to $20 these days in Manhattan, and sometimes it goes even more. You know what? I don't have the friggin' money to do that.
And the problem here is whenever our art theater, when they get to a film, they either play it for 1 week and dump it, or play it for 6 weeks.
And more than likely these days it's 1 week, because there's enough art films that in an urban area like New York City, they can put out, but you know, unless it has real staying power, it's not going to stay, because there are so many that want that space.
Yeah. Like 1 year, well, the year The Raid 2 comes out, and we'll bring that up a little later. Because I went to see The Raid 2, I missed, because it showed 2 weeks later, the Jim Jarmusch vampire film.
Yeah, I think
Joe
DeWorks is
doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Only Lovers Left Alive was the name of it.
Only Lovers Left Alive, Joe DeWorks's Dune, and the weird 2001-esque art film with Scarlett Johansson as the alien.
Under My Skin.
Yeah, Under the Skin.
Yeah, that one I didn't get. I'm sorry. That's just me.
That's another one of those. That's a last 20 minutes of 2001 movie.
Yeah. I never got
where
to
you
the
go there, see it on
the
giant screen, get stoned as fuck, and just let it wash over you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, and did you hear they're bringing out a Steelbook of The Shining next month?
Why?
Well, it's going to be they're touting it as the original cut that Kubrick released in 1980. So it might actually have the hospital scene added back into it, the coda of the movie.
Hmm. Yeah, to market something that's been marketed, how many DVDs, Blu-rays of that is out there? Gotta be between 10 and 20, easy.
There's two at least. I've got the Warner Brothers one that has a commentary, a documentary about Wendy Carlos, the short film that Kubrick's daughter shot on the set.
Yeah, but you know what? Since it came out in 80, how many re-releases, how many video, how many times has that been released throughout everything.
Well, The Shining's not always been in print. There was The Shining, the Kubrick, the original Kubrick set, which was the white ones. And then there was the two-disc deluxe Kubrick sets. And a regular one and this new steelbook.
Okay. Oh, it just seems like it's overkill, right? You know, I mean, you just... All they want to do is repackage and make more money. That's what this is all about. You know, and let's throw in one extra or, you know, new extra or something to make people want to buy it. But it's all about making money.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm sick of the same fucking titles coming out. That's what's killing the DVD market, too, is that the same fucking titles are coming out.
Right. I mean, I will say this. There are certain companies, releasing companies like Vinegar Syndrome and that are digging hard into material that hasn't seen the light of day. And thank God they exist. You know, Code Red.
Yeah, I like
all,
that one. Vinegar Syndrome released it this year called Buddies.
Yep.
Or was that last year?
I think it was late last year, actually.
Yeah, but still, Buddies is the very first AIDS movie.
Right. You know, and who just released the Laraz set? With Whirlpool?
Yeah,
and
there's only like one new one on it. It's like... re-release of Vampires, a re-release of Black Candles, and I forget what the other one is.
Whirlpool, which is one that
yeah.
had not had a release. So, you know, I mean, but those type of things, you know, granted, you're not going to sell tons and tons of copies, but to have them available, and not only have them available, but to catalog them and have a restorative copy out there, you know, you're doing film history a favor. Trust me, more than a favor by saving a lot of this stuff.
Oh yeah, most definitely. Even though most younger fans and hell fans our age. Really don't give a shit about their film history.
Well, some of us do. You and I do.
I was looking at a board I used. It was a wrestling board. But someone posted about the 50 worst films of all time. You remember that book?
Oh, yeah.
They said that book was stupid because it didn't have any of the bad films posted. Publishing date for the motherfucking book.
Well, you know what? You know, you know, you have to look at things from the time that they were released. Not only for a historical context, but for social context and all this. You know, that book, which was published, what, in the 80s? I think.
Yeah.
You know,
and if you've read the book, that book became inaccurate maybe 2 or 3 years after it came out with all the stupidity and bad information that MedVed put into it.
Well, I think it was bad like the moment it was out because, you know, to put something like Plan 9 from Outer Space as a bad movie, you know, the worst movie of all time, bullshit. Not even fucking close.
Oh, here's some more that was in the Golden Turkey book. You're going to scream bullshit for and the worst films. Let's see. WrestleMania from Ken Russell.
No.
Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid.
Oh, fuck him.
Badlands because it had too many boring long shots.
He needs to be strung up by... Well, no. He doesn't need to be strung up by the balls. He needs one of those dogs to go attack him. Go ahead. It's all about someone's point of view, right? And you know what?
Right.
Some people's point of view can be wrong, dead wrong.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Michael Medved, with his books, may have created the bad movie cult that watches shit like Plan 9 from Outer Space and led to MSTK 3000, where they actually got it right. Was that still, does that mean he's not an asshole?
No. Being an asshole has nothing to do with your knowledge of film, as you well know, right? And
yeah.
I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about me.
Well, I wouldn't consider you're an asshole about your knowledge of film, because you'll admit when you haven't seen something or you really don't know.
Yeah.
There's too many motherfuckers that just dance around that fact.
You know, at least if I don't know something, that's the first thing I say. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't know everything.
And the Cannes Film Festival is going, and there's bad news and good news for Carl. The bad news is Malick's new film promoted there, and they say it's on the same level of quality as...
His later stuff, like
naval gazing films.
Yeah.
Oh, the one after Night of Cups, I'm nothing. Even fans, I've heard nothing but horrid things about it.
Well, you know what? I always wait and see and make my own opinions. With Malick, of his later material, I did like Night of Cups. I did. I thought that was a good film. I did not like To the Wonder at all. But that's me. And I am a Malick fan. I'll be the first one to admit it.
Yeah. And when a Malick fan says he don't like when someone who's supposedly predilected to be a fanboy, a blind fanboy like Carl is, looks at one of the things that he's blind about and goes, that's shit.
You
better goddamn stand up and pay attention twice as hard.
Well, you know what? I don't think you give me enough credit because I am a fanboy of specific directors, as you well know, and I'll be the first one to admit it. But I'll also say, you know, that's not up to snuff. That's not a good film for him. And I'll say that.
Yeah. And what I'm saying is because you are a fanboy, when you actually say that, it means a lot more than some asshole who, indifferent to him, watches the movie and goes, that sucked.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. No question about it.
And Jim Jarmusch's new one is getting bad reviews, and the bad reviews for me makes me want to see it.
Well, you know, one of the coolest things I think about film is when a film is divisive, right? And you got a cachet of critics that don't like it, a cachet of critics that do. You know, when you get that, you know, that makes me want to see the movie because I want to make my own decision, right? You're the same way.
Yeah, well, the reviews of it say that it's a trashy zombie movie with Tilda Swinton acting over the top of the Irish accent and a sword.
And what's wrong with that?
Yeah. I always love reviews where they trash a film, and what they say is like, ooh, that makes me want to see it more.
You know, you talk about over the top. I can get to the review later, but John Wick 3 is way over the top. and they love it. You know, so what?
Yeah. I think what most of the complaints about John Wick 3 have heard is about the story.
Well, you know, if you want, I can go into it a little bit. So
yeah,
I did see
ahead.
It last night. And action-wise, it's killer. It's killer. I mean, the action is just fantastic. Also, people that know their kung fu films, and particularly Bruce Lee, there's a lot of nods to Lee's last film that he was filming when he died, called Game of Death. And, I mean, action-wise, it's really good. But what it lacks is any emotional core. The first and second film there were reasons this was happening, right? And there were emotional responses, like when John's dog is killed in the first one. You get it, okay? This one, just, you know, it's all set up from the second film. He had killed the bad guy there on the Continental grounds, and now, boom, everything is against him, and it's just there's no real reason to root, because you know John Wick is going to survive. You know this is, that you have fights where he starts winning then losing. He's going to come back and beat him. I mean, there's no mystery to it at all. And so
Bruce Lee standing behind you during the movie saying the speech in Enter the Dragon? You need
Which one was
emotional
that?
Content.
Yeah. Yeah, and there is none. And that hurts the film. It really does.
Oh, and I want to say this as a fact, and that is the reason that John Wick didn't beat Mad Dog, Mad Dog let him live. Out of the kindness of his heart.
Well, I'll tell you what. That's the second fight. So there are three fights in this staircase, one at the bottom, one in the middle, and one at the end. And Mad Dog is the second, is paired with another guy in the second one. And, John Wick goes through all of these fights. He's tired of that. There's not a believable sense at all to the fights. They're well choreographed. They're really brutal. But there's no reality here. None. Because there's no reality, there's no sense of urgency.
Well, that's one thing the Thai movies like Born to Fight, The Raid, and The Raid 2 gave us.
Yeah, and I would also say, if you really want to see something special, and I know you love The Raid and Raid 2, and you should, but Born to Fight, oh my Lord, unbelievable stunts. Seriously.
Yeah, in those three movies, when the good guy gets hurt, he's hurt. And when he's toward the end of the movie, he's sucking wind.
Yeah. You know, another one I would add
to
that
is during the final fight, and go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, the other one I would add to that list is Gareth Edwards' first film, which is Marin Town.
Yeah. But what I was going to say is there's a scene in the Raid 2 where he's fighting the assassin, who probably is the other guy with Bad Dog in that scene in John Wick 3, where they fight for 5 minutes. And then all of a sudden, they just stop.
Yeah.
And you see the center just... And then Rama passes the assassin a bottle of water, and they just sit there. to catch their breath.
Yeah.
That's the kind of realism that John Wick 3 is missing, right?
Right, but there is a scene where they where they're fighting the main guy, which we'll get to in a moment. They actually stop. And like he says, I'm such a fan of yours.
Yeah. I know. Well, I can't wait to see that movie because it just comes out of nowhere, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
And, of course, that has to do with who the actor is. So I know that was one thing we want to get to today. So I'm going to let you take over and talk about this gentleman. So go right ahead.
And that would be Mark DeCascos. I forget his real how to pronounce it.
DeCascos.
Yeah. But he was in a bunch of great freaking action films in the 90s. The one that most of y'all would know would be Brotherhood of the Wolf, where he played the Indian character.
Yes.
The one where Xavier Gans just stopped the damn movie just to let him beat ass for like 10 minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And he became pretty decent on the DVTV scene with Which Is Best, and you can see it on YouTube, and you really do need to see it, and that is Drive. It's like, imagine Mark DeCascos in a badass version of the John Dominic. He's carrying this electronic box in his body from New York all the way out to L.A., and Kadeem Hardinson from Another World is driving him there, and it's just basically him trying to kick the shit out of everyone who's trying to cut that piece out.
Yep.
It's one of the best cyberpunk movies out there, and there's only like two really great ones, sadly. Can you name any other great cyberpunk movies besides, there's three, my bad. There's Drive, Nemesis, and Strange Days.
Yeah, you could say Johnny Mnemonic, but that's problematic.
Yeah. That's Liam Gibson itself, but it was good, but
you know what? There's another one. There's another one you forgot.
What?
There's another one you forgot. Hardware.
Oh, God, yeah. Hardware, yeah. Cyberpunk is a very 90s sci-fi subgenre, isn't it, Carl?
Yep.
But
yep, it is.
Those ones that we said, please watch those Drive, Nemesis, and Strange Days, and definitely Hardware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But his best movie never got released to the United States. When we had Brian Yuzna on the show, he didn't even want to get into that fucking complicated mess that will not let it be released in the
Yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame.
And that is, and it's available on YouTube, Crying Freeman adapted from the manga. He plays a guy hypnotized by this big evil organization to be their hitman and killer. But then he beats this redheaded woman and falls in love. It is fucking amazing beyond amazing, isn't it, Carl?
It's very, very good. Now, I've not seen the whole film, but I've seen pieces of it, and it's really good.
Yeah. But, yeah, Mark DeCascos. There's so many little people that show up in John Wick 3. I can't wait to see it myself so I can point out some more things. But, yeah, John Wick 3 is the kind of movie that should lead you into more movie watching. Especially John DeCascos. And what TV show was he a host of, Carl?
So Mark Dacascos was in a number of TV shows. One was Kamen Rider, which actually is very good. But he was in Stargate Atlantis. He was in a number of things. But the most interesting thing he ever did was the Iron Chef. He was the chairman, particularly in the 2011-2012 series. And so they would always have a chairman. He would always give the rules and say, start. And, yeah, so here's this great kung fu guy on a Food Network show, which I find amusing, to say the least. Also, he had a wonderful 11-episode run on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., a ski era.
But he's had a good career, but he's one of those guys that just never got that, like another one of my favorites, Steve James, that never got that shot that would have taken him over the top.
Right. Now, I mean, he's still working. He's got a TV series that's post-production right now called Wu Assassins. He's doing a remake of The Driver in post-production. The 90s Driver. So, the guy's still working, and of course, he plays a major, major part in this. The other thing, too, that I should say is there's another shout-out that particularly has to do with Mark. But when he's introduced, he's at a sushi place as the server, and he's arguing with his other person about that's there about bringing out some tea. You know what that's a shout out to?
Yeah, Chiba Sini Kill Bill.
Yes. Yeah.
If he wasn't in such bad shape, I would have loved to have seen Chiba in a John Wick movie.
Well, you know what? He was, kind of. This predates John Wick. But there's a film called Sushi Girl.
Yeah.
Which is really an interesting film. I love the film. And it's got all these great action people in it. But Sonny Chiba is sort of the mastermind. So he doesn't do much, but he's got it all under control. And you don't realize it until the end. It's fucking awesome. I mean, that's what he would do.
And Blade of the Immortal. When that one scene shows up towards the end and they're like, and the main bad guy's like, who's going to kill this little girl? And they're all standing around, about 100 soldiers, and then this old guy comes out and goes, I'll do it. Everyone else
and
is like,
and when we both saw that, what did we yell at the screen?
Yeah. Holy shit, Chiba! It's fucking Chiba, man!
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things I wanted, we were having a conversation. Hold on, Steve. But the one thing I think that has sort of like pigeonholed Mark in his work is that his ethnicity, he's not exactly Asian, okay? But he's not Caucasian. And of course, here in the States, the action people in the 90s, you know, were, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Schwarzenegger. You had Stallone. You had, you know, these Caucasian guys.
Well, Stallone was on
now,
the downside in the 90s. You had more like Steven Seagal. And then you got on the home video front, you had Don the Dragon Wilson.
Well, that's where
Cynthia
I was going.
Rothrock,
So you know, you had Shokuzuki and Don Dragon on this level of B movies that were coming out, you know, direct video and onto HBO and all the pay channels. But the Cascos never even made that level to me, which is a shame. And I think part of it was that, you know, his ethnicity, it's hard to really. Now, if I'm not mistaken, he's part Thai too. And so it just didn't seem like he got the push that he should have. And it's a shame, because he's really good.
Yeah, so if you like John Wick 3 and you like him, go look up his earlier stuff. It's worth it. Especially
Absolutely.
Drive and Crying Freeman.
You know, and I got to say, if you want to see a bad movie that he's in it, which I love, but you can't stand, and that's Double Dragon. Yeah, he's chuckling for a reason. And I say he's right, but nonetheless.
As bad as Double Dragons is, it still isn't bad to be in the top tier shitty kung fu video game adaptation movies.
No, that's true. That's true.
If he was in besides Mortal Kombat Annihilation, which everyone knows, there's DOA, which is in the top level of shit. How would you like to see Eric Roberts as a kung fu master beating on people for 10 minutes during the final fight?
I can think of worse, but not much.
Yeah. But there's another film that they're talking, it's getting great reviews. The actors are getting like, this is the best they've ever done. And, well, let's go back to the year Deadpool came out.
Okay.
And there was this little movie that came out I went to see because of this is the poster. I'm sorry. And Carl went because of a tagline that was under the movie's title, right?
Okay, I got to remember what movie you're talking about here, so.
New England Folktale was under the tagline of it.
Ah, yes, 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 yes.
And as soon as you seen a folktale, you were like, I'm there. And the first
also
song,
because of the religious... The religious content of the film, which, of course, if it has a religious
thought,
content
in it. Once it was over after I seen it, is a friend of mine ended up being there. And I didn't expect it. We just looked at each other like, did we just see this on the big fucking screen?
Well, you know what? You said something I remember in our first conversation about it. You said that the film escaped.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. It escaped.
And that will be Robert Eggers' The Witch, one of the best and pretty much still misunderstood horror films of this decade.
Yeah. Really good.
There's just a pacing and creepiness to it. And it's been about 3 or so years since this came out, right?
Yeah, 3 or 4.
Yeah, and finally, earlier this year, all I seen was a photo, and I had to show Carl. And it was of Robert Pattinson and...
Willem Dafoe.
Willem Dafoe at a lighthouse, and I'm like, what? And the reviews were coming out, and good God, I want to see the lighthouse so bad. It's getting straight across the board great reviews.
Yep. And that's coming out, what, in October, I think?
Yeah, I think. All I know is if if it doesn't get a wide release. But if it wins Palme d'Or, of course it's going to get a big release.
Well, at least it'll get a big art house release, like The Witch did.
Yeah. And if it doesn't get a big art house release and it's not played at the Knoxville Horror Fest, I'm coming after you, my halfie, and I'll bring a machete.
Oh. Okay, William, you heard it here first. You know what the program.
Oh. The plot set up is him and Defoe are two old sailors who are assigned lighthouse duty on this barren and isolated island. And it's about their relationship and what happens once they get out there. And there's mermaids and just all sorts of weirdness going on.
Nice.
Yeah, and it's, like I said, they're saying this one might win the Palme d'Or. And not that many fucking horror films have won the Palme d'Or.
No, I don't think one has. Unless it was like The Exorcist back in the 70s. Seriously.
Yeah.
I tell you, it's funny about horror movies because you got your eyes on this one and another one that's supposed to be released by the end of the year, I got my eyes on. And that's
next
Midsummer.
Month.
Is that next month?
Yeah. They're going with the joke. They're going for it.
Okay, so Midsummer.
No, they're not. If they were, they'd release in July, wouldn't they?
Yeah, or it could be late June. That's fine. I'll take that.
Oh, well, thank you. So they're releasing Midsummer during Midsummer.
Right, so Midsummer is a film by Ari Aster who did Hereditary. And immediately, if it has a religious content, I'm going to be interested. Plus, This is like, you know, the second coming of the Wicker Man, it looks like.
Like I said, I've read the script, Carl.
Yep.
And I was being literal. It's like the Wicker crossed with Martyrs.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to see that one. That one's on the list.
And coming out around October is a new one for a guy that we've been championing here on the KSDAD radio, and that's the guy who directed Trash Fire, Excision, and American Gothic.
And that would be Ricky Bates, who is one of the really unique.
Yeah.
But let me go on here, Stephen, for a second. Ricky Bates is really unique in his choice of material and his writing is really sharp. There's a very bitter humor to a lot of the stuff and a lot of emotional truth. And Trash Fire, you know, we were talking earlier, we've got to pull together our top 20 films of the decade. Freaking guarantee you Trash Fire's on my list. No question.
He knows
Ricky
how
Bates
to make
really
people
good.
Uncomfortable.
Oh, without a doubt.
And in this one, this millennial rents this house from this serial killer who's like an old school hippie. And basically, he's trying to stay off of killing, but she's driving him crazy with her millennial bullshit.
That sounds like a good satire.
Yeah. And that one comes out around October. And of course, we still have the Cannes premiere of Once Upon a Time Hollywood this week, which I can't wait to get the reviews of that, see if it sucks or not.
Well, you know, it is Tarantino, so that'll get a good release, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's coming out the last week in July, and I will be there to watch it.
Oh, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will.
Hey, I'm the kind of guy who's like, oh, God, I don't want to go to a movie. I don't want to go see Star Wars. I don't want to go see John Wick. I don't want to go see fucking Avengers. They're like $10-$15 a ticket. Hey, what? $20 without popcorn or anything to see Hateful Eight in 70mm. $20? Yes. Okay, here. Fuck it, Christmas money too.
Well, you know, I touched on it earlier. I went to see John Wick last night, and it was at a neighborhood theater way out in Queens. And that was nice because it was like $10 for an evening show. I can handle that once in a while. But to go into Manhattan, pay $18, $20, $22, no, not going to happen.
That's one thing I really miss from the 90s that we really haven't talked about before.
What?
The dollar theaters.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. I love dollar theaters.
Yeah. There's even some movies I wouldn't even have watched if it wasn't for in dollar theaters. Crow City of Angels.
Well, that's your fault, you know. You know, just because it's only a buck doesn't mean it's worth it. I'm just saying.
Yeah, those days are gone. I miss those.
You know, or back
but
in the day.
Yeah, all these deaths that happened this weekend, Tim Conway, Grumpy Cat, who else? Lena Horne.
No, Lena Horne actually did not die. She died in 2010.
Okay,
we had Peggy Lipton
passed
away, too.
Yeah, Peggy Lipton. And someone who wrote one of the most important two books that he won Pulitzer Prize for. That'd be Herman Wouk. He died. Not a goddamn word.
Yeah, it's I did see it, but I didn't see it until after we did our memorial show this past Friday. But yes, he did pass away. Really fine writer, and started out with the Caine Mutiny. These are films that were based on his work. Caine Mutiny. Marjorie Morningstar, The Winds of War and War and Remembrance, and Slattery's Hurricane was the other one, and Young Blood Hawk. But these are really, you know, the quality of the films that were made from his stuff was good, and very, very good. And, of course, part of that is because the quality of the source material. Man won two Pulitzers.
The Winds of War and the War of Remembrance, I checked it, was the last mega series.
Yeah. Winds of War comes from 1971, and then War of Remembrance is 1978.
Yeah, and Winds of War was 1984, the TV movie. And War of Remembrance was about 3 years later.
Right. Right. The other thing we need to talk about, at least the touch base, was Herman was a devout Orthodox Jew. And,
yeah, I'll let you touch that, but wait.
Okay, go ahead.
The Caine Mutiny, when I first seen it, Carl, it blew my mind because I've seen, to me, Humphrey Bogart was film noir. Humphrey Bogart was Casablanca.
Oh, yeah.
And seeing him in such a nuanced role where he plays the bad guy who's not the bad guy of the story.
Yep.
And there really isn't any good guys or bad guys in the story.
Nope.
And the fact that he doesn't let anybody off the hook on it, that really shows his military experience in it. A lot of his books and stuff he took from, well, one, which you're going to talk about, his religion, and two, his experience of World War II.
Right. And those were the two major influences on his work. No question about that. His military experience, of course, had to do specifically with the winds of war and war and remembrance. But also his religious upbringing as an Orthodox Jew had a lot to do with war and remembrance, but also in his novels called The Hope and the Glory. They were two separate novels, The Hope and then The Glory later. But, you know, he also talks about the formation of the Nation of Israel, but all from a very devout perspective. And I found that very, very enlightening. And that, I mean, really, really great writer.
Yeah, he was one of the best of his generation. I mean, Pulitzer Prize winning. I don't know if The Winds of War ever came out on DVD, but it was a long one. I think it was like 9 hours altogether.
Something like that. It was huge.
That was a thing in the 80s and late 70s. It came after Roots was a big network hit. You would get these things like North and South, Book 1 and 2. Poor Man, Rich Man, Part 1 and 2. Quick question to you all. Whose big breakout role was in Rich Man, Poor Man, Book 1 and 2?
I don't know offhand. It's been so long since I've seen it.
Nick Nolte.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He went from, it was after Who Will Stop the Rain came out, but you know that movie is a great movie that didn't do shit at the box office.
That's true. Very true.
So he went from Rich Man, Poor Man to being a racist cop cursing out Eddie Murphy.
There was a lot of things in between that, though, let's face it.
Yeah.
They're coming out with a DVD of his film called Grace Quigley, which was the last film that Katharine Hepburn starred in.
And the most controversial movie she ever starred in.
Absolutely. And also, I have to give a shout out the person who did the commentary on this upcoming release is a friend of ours. He was also on our podcast. His name is Daniel Kramer. And he's a writer and filmmaker that's based out in San Francisco. So yeah, he's going to be doing the commentary on that.
Yeah, it's another one of those. It's a good movie, but the book and the original R-rated cut, which it wouldn't let him put out, was a hell of a lot fucking darker.
Well, this is supposed to be the original cut.
Yeah.
This is the,
oh, good.
From what I understand.
Yeah, Kino Lober, Carl, I think they've been fucking hacking Carl's computer.
Yeah, no shit. Good God.
Because one of the movies that me and Carl thought that would never would hit Blu-ray or DVD because of the music rights, and I won't be surprised if some of the songs are missing from the movie, would be FM.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have a great love of that film because I was running the college radio station as that film came out. I think that film was 78, if I'm not mistaken. And so I was running.
That if you was in radio at that time, FM was a painful movie to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I mean it's a comedy drama. So there are things you can laugh at about it too, but ultimately, oh yeah, it's a tearjerker for radio people. Seriously.
And did you see them all? Well, this is funny. Well, listen, one of the coolest documentaries ever is being worked on and hopefully comes out this year.
Oh, which one is that?
Chinese Hercules, the Bolo Young story.
Yes. Yeah, I'd be interested in that, no question. We do love some Bolo here, no doubt.
Yeah, and another one that really, Bright Star comes out this week, and it's already leaked online, so any of you people who's already reviewed it, fuck you. You're nothing fucking low-life thieves. And if a movie that you want to be made or remade doesn't get remade because they're afraid of the cost of it and the people will go see it, it's your fucking fault.
Listen, whenever you pirate, you know, you think you're hurting the big guys? You don't hurt the big guys. You hurt the little guys. The little guys who put out things like Tales of Halloween, and they won't do a sequel because you fucking stole, you know, three-quarters of their budget, if not more, three times their budget. You know, or things like ABC's of Death 3. You know, not coming out because you fucking stole them. And it's the little guys that get hurt.
And I bet Brightburn's box office is going to be fucked because of all the people that probably have downloaded it.
I hope not. You know, and I hope it's a good movie. James Gunn produced it. He didn't direct it, but he produced it, and I think he co-wrote the script too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's a simple setup. What if Superman was a psycho?
Yep, his adopted parents, you know, don't know it right at the beginning. Yeah.
Well, how you gonna know it was a baby? But this has been a interesting year for horror films because not many of them have fit the mold of what you would expect.
Well, you know, we touched on that, Stephen. I think horror films, you know, we're getting a real renaissance in horror and doing things that aren't expected. I mean, we talked about two that are coming out, The Lighthouse and Midsommar. But you take a look at the last 5 years. You look at The Witch, you look at all these films, The Purge, political comment. They're using horror to really make comments socially and politically, and it's really expanding the genre. And I think it's a great thing.
Yeah, you get these films like that, Midsommar, Hereditary, What We Do, It Comes at Night, A Quiet Place. They're making them for pennies. And then they put them out and they have one good read. It made $30 million this week. Every other film, oh, we failed them. Swish, 3 points.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a couple others we need to mention. A Girl Walks at Night. One of my favorites, is your next, which I friggin' love.
Yeah.
But so many good films out there in the horror genre. It's a wonderful time. It really is.
It is
so
a really good
Steven?
Time to be a fan. Because even the third biggest world film this year is a Chinese sci-fi film.
Oh, yeah. That was just released on Amazon Prime.
I think. Netflix. And
Netflix, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I showed you the trailer for that one. I forget the title. The Swedish sci-fi film that Central showed last week. I think the last showing of it
really
is this today. Yeah. We're getting Solaris-style fucking sci-fi films out there.
Let's not forget Claire Denis's new film, which is called High Life, which also stars Robert Pattinson.
I mean, really? Carl thinks, what is it, Schizopolis is one of David Cronenberg's lesser films?
Cosmopolis.
Yeah,
Schizopolis is Soderbergh. Cosmopolis.
Yeah. But Robert Pattinson is so fucking good in that. And that's how I see him playing Bruce Wayne.
Oh, yeah. This all of this feedback about, you know, that it's a wrong decision to have him as Batman. Sorry. Disagree. I think it's a really good choice.
Yeah, we're saying,
he
like,
is good.
Motherfucker, have you seen this shit? No, why? Try this.
Yeah. I mean, he has done a lot of really good films.
Yeah. And what do you guys have planned for the rest of this week, for this week?
Well, right now, Doc will be doing a show tomorrow, a review show. Chrissy's got a show coming up on the Legion, Deviant Legion, and that's on Thursday. We're still not exactly what's sure of happening either Friday or Saturday. I got to check with Doc and his schedule because he's supposed to be in transit on Friday. So we may do a special show on Saturday. We'll have to see. So the weekend is a little bit but I will tell you one thing.
What's the show going to be tomorrow? Any idea what titles he's picked besides you possibly doing John Wick 3?
No, I probably will come in and do John Wick 3. I'll have to talk to him about that. But I don't think that'll be a problem. I'll definitely go in and talk about John Wick 3. What I was going to say is we do have a couple things brewing very, very big for June. Being here in the city now, and also I have a very close friend that I'm staying with at the moment. It is the 50th anniversary of Stonewall, which was the real beginning of LGBT rights. And so we are planning at least two shows in June with some very, very special guests talking about the history and that of Stonewall. So that's going to be on my show, but that won't be until the end of June. But that's sort of what I'm working on right now.
And
so that's,
for us, later this month, we've got, well, I'm probably going to try to do a makeup with our guests from last night. And me and Mike, at the first of next month, we're going to be doing the One-Armed Swordsman. And this Sunday is going to be Vicky Loves Sci-Fi, where she gets to bitch about, I'll bring on the last topic. She's going to talk about Game of Thrones and all that. And we're going to debate on if Spock is from Alabama now or Mississippi.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I tell you what, you need to listen to Vicky on her opinions on that. Oh, you might want to hide during that, Stephen. I'm just saying.
No, I'm just fucked up about it. You know what I'm talking about, don't you? Do you know what one of the major plot points about Spock in the new series is?
No.
He fell in love with and wants to fuck his sister.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that.
What the fuck?
You know, did somebody see Scarface way too much?
I don't know. Or else his mom's from Alabama.
Yeah, true.
But here's the last bit of the show I'm bringing up after that. Okay. Dear fanboys and girls, you don't like Robert Pattinson, you go do a fucking petition. You think that Game of Thrones last season sucks, you go do a fucking petition. You whine, you complain, you rattle your little sabers to try to change shit. What's it going to change, Carl?
Not a goddamn thing.
Right. You know why? The next episode after you got pissed off, you watched it. You gave them your money by viewing it. You gave them what they wanted, ratings.
Yeah.
I have never seen a petition be successful.
I'm sure maybe one petition was, but it doesn't happen often. Trust me.
We said it before, and we said it again on this time. And, Carl, does your opinion matter?
To me? To anyone else?
Yeah,
not really.
No, does my opinion matter in the picture? No.
You know, the thing about it is, and I will say this, that opinions do matter. But you have to realize that, A, you have a valid opinion, and, B, that you're willing to back it up and know what's behind it. Now, that's what makes a critic. A critic is not someone that says, this movie sucks, this movie sucks, this movie sucks, and that's all you say. That's bullshit. You're being a petulant little child. Know what you're talking about. You know,
yeah.
I mean.
And plus, here is a critic is a guide. It's like Carl walk out with a stack of 20 movies that he likes and a stack of 20 movies he don't like. And he said, look at those, judge on what you like on those. If you agree with me on those, then you'll listen to what I say because I might be on your level. That's what a reviewer does. That's what you're supposed to do as a reviewer. You're supposed to preach to those who are on your level.
Or to interest someone so they want to get on your level. That's another thing.
Yeah.
Be inclusive. You know what? Hold on. There's a letter that we always talk about when it's about reviewing. It's the letter Y. Why do you like something? Why don't you like it? What are the reasons? If you can't answer that, then you're not being a reviewer. It's as simple as that.
No. And a reviewer is a lot more than saying, this movie sucks. This movie rocks. That's a starter.
But why does it? See, it's the letter.
Yeah, why does it suck? Why does it rock?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, and sorry for the trouble we had the ball last night. And thank you for being on, Carl.
Oh, listen, I'm glad to be here. I apologize about last night. I truly do. But listen, you did a great job, Stephen. And thanks to everyone for listening. All right? And good night.
And this song which I'm about playing is, well, they're doing Monster Month all month at Central. And this song is from what they're closing it with. So if you're in Knoxville and you're a fan of this movie, which you'll know as soon as the song starts playing, come see it.
Cool.
Just me.